to Leonard Legal Buzz from the law firm of Leonard Street & Diner. Few current legal concepts sound more medieval than piercing the corporate veil, but the consequences can be devastating. In business law, the corporate veil generally acts as shining armor for shareholders and officers, shielding them from personal liability for the corporation's debts and obligations. But just as King Arthur's armor could be penetrated, so too can a shareholder or officer's. Joining me to discuss piercing the corporate veil are David Ezrelov and Catherine McEnroe. David is a shareholder in Leonard Street & Dinard's corporate and business group, focusing on mergers and acquisitions and family and closely held businesses. And Catherine is a shareholder in Leonard Street & Dinard's business and commercial litigation group and is an adjunct professor at William Mitchell College of Law, teaching closely held businesses. David, Catherine, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Great to be here.
David, let me start with you. What exactly is piercing the corporate veil?
Well, I think that it would probably be best by starting with what is the purpose of actually forming an entity, whether that entity be a corporation or limited liability or any other type of legal entity that limits the owner's liability. One of the primary purposes of forming such an entity is to shield or protect your personal assets or the owner's assets from claims or obligations of that business or company. And piercing the corporate veil is an exception to that rule, where a court will go through the assets of the company and hold the owners personally liable for the debts and obligations of the company. So imagine that either by yourself or a mom and pop situation, you form a restaurant and you go to the Secretary of State and file articles of incorporation to commence the corporation. And after about a year or two, your business isn't going very well and you wind up going out of business. And there are certain creditor claims, whether it's from a customer that had food poisoning or a common situation, it is the landlord that is asking for rent because you defaulted on the lease. In those situations, you know, you typically would expect that if the corporation has no assets, that's all that the creditor is able to get. And if there's nothing left, that creditor isn't going to get paid. It's in those situations where a creditor will often try to bring a claim to say, hey, we think that the owners of the corporation should be liable because there were certain factors and corporate formalities that were not followed. And therefore, they ought to, out of their own personal assets, pay the deficiency or those debts and obligations that the corporation couldn't pay. And so that's an example of piercing the corporate veil, where the personal owners or the owners of the corporation are liable for the debts and obligations of the company and have to come out of their own assets to pay the deficiency. And that is what we are trying to assist our clients to avoid.
So, Catherine, what does it take to pierce the corporate veil and hold shareholders personally liable?
Well, in Minnesota, courts have developed a two-part test to determine when the individuals behind the corporation's shield should be held personally responsible. In the first part of the test, the court will consider whether or not the corporation is the mere instrumentality or alter ego of the owners or shareholders. And in the second part of the test, the court will look at whether or not holding the individuals liable for the corporation's debts is unfair in some way. Now, under the first part of the test, whether or not the individuals are the mere instrumentality or the alter ego of the corporation, the court looks at a series of factors. Now, those factors will differ in various jurisdictions, but in Minnesota, what they look at primarily are whether or not the corporate owners have followed corporate formalities, and that would be such as keeping a corporate minute book, having bylaws, taking minutes of meetings that the directors or the shareholders might hold on an annual basis, or if there are only a few shareholders or a single shareholder, whether or not there are written actions by that shareholder electing annually the directors or having the directors annually do a written action to elect the officers. Another factor other than corporate formalities that the courts would look at would be whether or not the corporation was sufficiently capitalized when the business was started and as the business continued to operate. And that would be how much money did the owners put into the business? Was it sufficient to operate the business? And, for example, did they get a bank line of credit to continue the operation of the business and therefore not put the creditors at risk of not getting paid? And then one of the other factors, one of the big factors the courts will look at, is whether or not there has been commingling of the individual owner's assets or money with the corporation's assets. So in that factor, the courts would look to see, did they keep separate sets of books? The corporation has its own books. Did the owners take loans out from the corporation? And if so, did they document that with a promissory note or some sort of a loan agreement to formalize that? Or were they just washing their own money in and out of the company's coffers? So the court would look through those various factors. And if the court saw that corporate formalities were not being observed, that the individual owners were not observing the distinction between their own funds and the corporation's funds, then the corporation would move to the second factor and decide whether or not holding the individual shareholders liable, whether that would be unjust or whether that would be fundamentally unfair to the individual shareholders. Those are the basic steps that the court would walk through to determine whether or not to pierce the corporate veil and hold individual owners responsible for the corporation's debts.
Does piercing the corporate veil differ if the corporation is a closely held business with only one owner instead of a large Fortune 500 company?
Well, the short answer is no. But the reality is, in a closely held company, for various reasons, the owners are more susceptible to being personally liable for those companies' obligations and debts. The reality is that because of the closely held nature, certain formalities are just eased and not followed. It is unusual in a sole shareholder corporation or even a mom and pop shareholder corporation to have an actual annual meeting, for example. And furthermore, they don't often have the financial resources to follow some of the corporate formalities that you would find in a Fortune 500 company. Nonetheless, I think it's important to note that nowhere in the statutes or case law is there a distinction made of the pure number of shareholders and some threshold or exemption if you are a large entity so that you are protected from piercing the corporate veil claims. And in that regard, it's important to understand that not only are personal owners liable, but oftentimes you see a situation where you have a parent subsidiary structure or an affiliated entity structure, which is oftentimes referred to as enterprise liability. So for example, you have XYZ Corporation wants to form a separate business unit to perhaps maybe isolate a liability, and they form an entity that's wholly owned by XYZ Corporation, and we'll call it ABC Corporation. And it's possible that if ABC Corporation doesn't follow corporate formalities, that its owner, which is XYZ, could be held liable for the debts and obligations of ABC Corporation. And so, again, it's not limited to individuals. It's any owner. The concept of piercing the corporate veil is going after the owner of a legal entity to hold the owner liable for the debts and obligations of that and of the corporation. One way that we often advise clients to minimize or lessen their exposure to claims of piercing the corporate veil in an enterprise liability type of situation is to really, again, treat each entity as a separate entity and try your hardest to have every transaction be at an arm's length transaction. So, for example, you often see type of cost sharing or administrative services agreement so that the subsidiary or affiliated entity that happens to be in the same office space and uses a lot of the resources from the parent at least shares the cost in those. And it's an illustration or example and would be evidence that we really are respecting the lines between each entity.
Catherine, is veil piercing common in litigation, and in what type of case would it come up?
Well, piercing the corporate veil can occur in any type of case where you have an entity that gives the owners limited liability, but it does probably occur most often in connection with claims against closely held businesses. And the type of case would be, by way of example, a contract claim by a creditor against a closely held corporation where the corporation is unable to pay its debts to that creditor, and therefore the creditor attempts to pierce the corporate veil and hold the individual shareholders or owners liable for the corporation's debts to that creditor under a contract theory of law. And another example would be in the context of a tort claim, that is, a claim for negligence or some sort of product liability against a corporation or a company, maybe a restaurant, as David described earlier, where an individual suffered food poisoning. They might attempt to pierce the corporate veil and hold the individual owner responsible for their injuries and that liability which the corporation could not satisfy. In a study that was conducted by Robert Thompson for an article in the Connecticut Journal of International Law, he looked at cases nationally from 1906 to 1985, and in about 40% of the cases where a piercing the corporate veil claim was asserted, it was successful. So when it happens, it often works. I would point out, though, that piercing the corporate veil is not in and of itself a claim. A failure to observe the corporate formalities is not in and of itself illegal. The piercing the corporate veil claim generally would come as a follow-on claim or a second claim once the corporation or the limited liability company is unable to satisfy its own debts.
You've each spoken about piercing the corporate veil once a business loses in court. Is this the only time the concept arises?
Well, usually, but not always. Piercing is probably the best way to try to satisfy a judgment that's unpaid by a closely held entity, but it sometimes is used to gain leverage earlier in a lawsuit. I had a recent case where discovery revealed that the sole shareholder and owner of the company was secreting away or siphoning off the assets of the corporation so that the corporation would be unable to pay any judgment to its creditor. And so we brought the piercing claim much earlier in the case and attempted to get the individual shareholder into the case so that, number one, he would stop siphoning off the assets, and number two, so that if we were successful, he would be held personally responsible if the corporation could not pay. It's great motivation to an individual shareholder sometimes to get a settlement going between the corporation and the plaintiff who's suing.
And in my experience, it is typically the advice where a corporation is now out of business and has no assets to satisfy these judgments that you don't answer the complaints, you don't defend the complaint because the corporation has no assets and the shareholder is not going to, at this point, put more money into the corporation in order to defend it. So in the situation where the shareholder is now named individually, we are forced to defend the claim and now spend the money that is necessary in order to defend or settle because the claim is against the individual and not the corporation.
Given the downside of such a claim, how can businesses prevent the piercing of their veil?
Well, I wish we could give the magic advice and eliminate all risk, but unfortunately, it's probably not likely to eliminate all of the risk. So generally, what you try to do is, number one, seek a lawyer's advice at the outset so that you can understand what these corporate formalities are all about. And to be honest, following the corporate formalities are not difficult, they're not expensive, and overall, we always tell clients respect the entity or the law won't respect it. And I think it's worth noting that of all these factors that Catherine mentioned earlier, it's not that one factor in and of itself is determinative. And so if you didn't have an annual meeting in 2005, doesn't necessarily mean that the creditor is going to be successful in trying to pierce the corporate veil. It is also important to note that even if factors are present, there still has to be this element of injustice or substantial unfairness in order for the creditor to prevail on the piercing the corporate veil claim. So in a situation where a sole shareholder has done his or her best to operate the company, has followed substantially all of the corporate formalities, and not only lost money in it but had to pay a senior lender pursuant to a personal guarantee, we'd like to believe that in those situations, a creditor would not be successful in piercing the corporate veil. If I could leave with one piece of overall advice, it would be that the more you cause your corporation to behave like a corporation, the more likely the law will treat it as a corporation when someone is trying to hold the owners personally liable.
David, Catherine, you've certainly given our listeners a lot to consider. Thanks very much for your time.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
And thank you to our listeners for joining us. If you'd like to learn more about piercing the corporate veil, we invite you to contact us at 612-335-1500 or visit us online at www.leonard.com. Leonard Street & Dinard is among Minnesota's largest law firms, with offices in Minneapolis, St. Cloud, and Mankato, Minnesota, and in Washington, D.C. From its regional base, Leonard Street & Dinard serves clients throughout the United States and internationally. The firm employs nearly 200 attorneys in more than 40 practice areas, and since its founding in 1922, has helped generations of clients achieve their business objectives through astute legal advice, complemented by good common sense. To learn more, visit Leonard Street & Dinard's website at www.leonard.com. This podcast is provided by the law firm of Leonard Street & Dinard as a service to clients and the general public. The information contained in this recording is neither designed nor intended to be relied upon as specific legal advice to any individual or organization. Listeners should always consult with their attorney about specific legal matters.